Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation with Fran Minnell, the director of the National Park Service, which is with the Department of Interior. And joining us in our conversation is Tom Maui.
Fran, in the previous segment, we discussed the National Park Service critical land management issues. In this segment, let's talk about some of the administrative management challenges that the NPS faces. Can you describe the human resource challenges that you face as the director?
Well, we have such wonderful employees in our National Park Service, and we want to continue to make sure that we have them trained, have the right skills, and are able to bring forth the folks that are definitely loving the resources and want to take care of them, as well as making sure that the visitor has a positive experience. I think I mentioned maybe earlier that right now our workforce is made up of 56% private sector and 44% federal employees. But again, our 44% of federal employees are just wonderful, and we are stressing the skills from communications to understanding the resources to be able to help people further comprehend what a great resource our parks are to their everyday life. And as we call the parks, soul of America, and that soul only happens through our employees and their ability to communicate.
The Park Service has actively participated in competitive sourcing, which is one of the components of the President's Management Agenda. For our listeners, could you describe competitive sourcing and how it can benefit an organization?
Well, what we've been able to do is actually look at the competitive sourcing through the what's called a competitive review, which is where we actually are looking at a park and having what we call a pre-planning effort, because the goal of competitive sourcing is not to be eliminating federal employees or anything of that nature. It's to make us most efficient and effective, to be the best we can be. And part of what the competitive sourcing laws allow us under the revised A76, that's a circular that guides us on this, it allows us to go through planning and look at our employees in different settings, and we've been doing that fairly regularly. We've done it most recently at the Golden Gate National Park that's in San Francisco, where we looked at the employees in certain areas, and particularly maintenance areas and a few others, to see, are we organized the best way we can be? Are we doing all that we could? And we were able to find some improvements that we could do, and we do compare this to the private sector, but we are not having to put it out to bid because of the fact that the management review or the competitive review concept allows us to look at it, make adjustments, and then if that's successful, even though we've looked at it compared to the private sector, as long as we're more effective and efficient than what the private sector would look at, we have a consultant, a business consultant that helps us do that, we're able to make revisions to our organization and move forward. We've had no loss of jobs as a result. We've had two regular competitive sourcing competitions where it actually went to bid. Natchez Trace, and that is an example of one most recently in Mississippi. But we have won everything that has come forth. So because of that success, and because we're 56% private sector already, we have been able to use the planning effort as a way for us to not have our employees feel threatened, but yet having them do a management review so that they know they're the best they can be. And it may mean some changes in positions, but it means that we've been able to go forth in a way with no loss of jobs.
Are there challenges incurred as a result of participating in competitive sourcing, for example, maintaining diversity in the workforce or allocating resources to perform the sourcing analysis?
Again, because we've not lost any jobs, I wouldn't really directly be able to speak to that other than to tell you that the diversity efforts are something that we are spending so much time on in national parks to make sure that when our recruiting side, as we bring people on, that we're looking at a great diversity of employees and finding ways to put a game plan together that allow us to reach out to a greater diverse opportunity. We want to stay relevant. We want to look at ourselves compared to the population and make sure that we are important and reflective of that. And we've been very successful in that area, as well as we do our competitive review, we make sure that part of what we're reviewing is that we are being diverse and that we are continuing to make sure we reflect the society that we serve.
The National Park Service is an active partner in scientific research and recreation programs with private organizations. Can you give us some examples of these programs?
Well, we've been working very closely in scientific research. Some of our partners have been other federal agencies, like some of what we mentioned about the tamarisk and the exotic plants. We work in conjunction not only with our folks, but we are working in conjunction with the Native Americans. We're working in conjunction with other organizations, particularly through our Natural Resource Challenge. Our Natural Resource Challenge that I mentioned earlier helps us to look at our natural resources, monitor them, but we've also been working with our different colleges across our nation in having them help us do a lot of our scientific research. And we have partnerships that reflect it so that for every dollar we spend, we get $4 back in research. And that has been an exciting way. Another example has been some of what we've done with our Rivers, Trails, and Conservation Assistance Program, which helps us not only create new trails and river development, but it means we also find ways of working with the communities. We believe working with the gateway communities are absolutely critical. And in fact, we have developed a community toolbox, which is focused on consensus building and a techniques for public participation with communities and to help them get organized and how we can turn different visions into reality. I've also done a director's order on civic engagement and public involvement, which says that each of our parks, as we are doing research or whether we're doing management like changing fees in parks or other things of this nature, we must reach out to the community and must reach out to any of the partners, environmental leaders, recreation users nationally, to make sure we include them as we decide how we move forward. We're the final decision maker, but we want to have the input on the front side, not after we make a decision and then try to realize we didn't talk to communities. So that is a mandate that we've done.
How does that mandate actually benefit the National Park Service?
Well, I think it's brought us together with so many new partners. Again, I believe in a seamless network of parks, which means not just state parks and local parks, but it's also private parks. It's the citizens who enjoy it. But we're trying to make sure that as we move forward, that we have been able to be more proactive. In actuality, it will mean the resource is better protected. It means the visitors to the parks will have their needs reflected. And in the long run, it's less time involved. It's more efficient and effective because you reach out on the front side, not afterward you've made a decision. Then you're trying to say, oops, I didn't talk to all the different groups, and now I have to make modifications because I didn't take into consideration some of their needs.
Let's talk about the challenges of balancing. And I'm curious about balancing sort of the immediate land management needs, say like repairs after natural disasters, versus some of the long-term operational management objectives.
Well, as you know, we've just had major impacts from the hurricanes that have just taken place. This has been a historic year with hurricanes, particularly down in the Florida area. But actually, in national parks, we had eight different states impacted, Florida being the most impacted, with Gulf Islands, National Seashore, and Pensacola with approximately about a $30 million financial impact. And the second, though, was Blue Ridge in North Carolina, the Blue Ridge Parkway. Of course, that covers many states, but it was the North Carolina section where we actually had impact to a visitor center and to roads, and that's almost a $14 million impact. And what we do here, thanks to Congress and the President, we have gone forth with a bill that has allowed us to receive some funding. In fact, hopefully I'll be going out shortly to visit a lot of the areas to let them know that they have that money coming to them to help them in their being restored. But part of it is also partnership because, for example, at Gulf Islands, I saw the whole community, the tourism sections of the community, the Chamber of Commerce, the business people, the environmental leaders, because we have so many significant cultural resources there, Fort Pickens and so many artifacts, everybody pulling together to get the park back open, because it's a symbol of the health of the community when that park reopens. And so the encouragement from the community was to get our visitor center as open as quick as we can, even though the rest of the park will probably take about 6 months to get all of it fully reopened. But we are working with the community. I think it's absolutely critical to be balancing those efforts together.
That's interesting, especially the part about the park being the health of the community. What does the future hold for the National Park Service? We'll ask its director, Fran Minella, for her thoughts when the Business of Government Hour returns.